A woman was working really late one night at her office in the city when she overheard a strange noise and interrupted her work. It was coming from outside the window. As it got louder, she recognized the sound. It was unmistakable. It was the sound of a baby crying. Such a strange noise at that time of night, especially in the city, with her working late. Especially in that part of town, where there were just not many houses at all. She looked out the window, couldn't see anything, but the crying just kept continuing. It sounded almost as if it was inside the building. She goes downstairs to check, where the noise was so loud that it could only have been coming from right outside the front door. She put her hand on the door handle, but despite that, all of her instincts kept telling her to help the baby. Something inside her, something in her gut, stopped her from opening the door. She goes back in and calls the police and described the situation, told them what was going on, asked if they knew anything about a missing baby. She didn't really get the answer she was expecting, though. The police officer told her not to open the door under any circumstances, to move away from the windows and wait for help. They were on their way. The woman thought that the missing child had indeed been reported before, so she put the phone down, moved away from the window, and just waited. But the crying just kept going on and getting louder. And then she thought, well, why should I wait for the police? They could take a while. This baby might need urgent help. It might be injured. It had to be getting cold outside. She decided that she'd bring the poor kid inside and wait for the police. So she opened the door and stepped out onto the street. The crying immediately stopped. She looked around. She didn't see any sign of a baby anywhere. The next sound she heard was her own screams. When the police finally got there, they found her dead body on the street, her throat slashed. If she'd stayed on the phone long enough, the police officer would have had time to let her know that there was a serial killer on the loose in town who was luring women outside at night with the recorded sound of a crying baby. Your mom is so ugly. When she fell out of the ugly tree, even the branches got out of her way on the way down.
Well, she smoked more reefer than me. She smoked more reefer than you. And she can't find no reefer. She just don't know what to do. I got a reefer smoking woman.
That's good stuff by Blues Hammer. Hey, urban legends, you gotta love those. Yeah, that was an interesting urban legend I read a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, yeah, I've gotta share that one with you guys. However, man, there's so many urban legends out there. The more, it's almost like an unlimited list of urban legends. I got one more before the show's over with today. I'll try to keep this one kind of short as well. But thanks again for the guys at Blues Hammer for the intro music. Appreciate having some bumper music. And a couple of shout-outs. I want to thank Emily at haveyoucovered.net for the kick-ass logo. So, you know, folks, check out our website. If you just want a logo for something for your social media, which I think is a cool idea, then by all means, drop her a request. I'm sure she'll get back with you and help you out. Wanted to kind of bring up an interesting topic. I was listening to another podcast probably about a week ago. And let me get this low hum noise off my computer. And they were talking about UFO disclosure. And I've seen more and more people online on social media talking about, hey, is this going to happen? Are we going to have disclosure? And there was like a big push that under the Trump administration, we would have disclosure, but that didn't happen. Even though that was sort of a bit of a, probably more of a hyped up expectation then. If you were going to get it, it probably would have been under that administration. However, there are articles that come out here and there that talk a little bit about disclosure. And this one is from the debrief.org, by Tim McMillan. And this is a article said, Pentagon confirms leaked UFO images are authentic. And I'll just read a little bit of this. You'll want to go to the debrief.org. This is not, I don't have the rights to this. This is Tim McMillan's work. The Pentagon has confirmed that U.S. Navy personnel captured several leaked images in a video depicting unidentified aerial phenomena, or UAP, involving incidents being investigated currently by the Department of Defense's Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Task Force. And this is a quote in here. I can confirm that the referenced photos and videos were taken by Navy personnel. The UAPTF has included these incidents in their ongoing examinations, Pentagon spokesperson Susan Goh told the debrief in an email. John Greenwald, who runs the popular government document archive, The Black Vault, also confirmed the videos were authentic via a statement from Go. Now, The Black Vault is a website I go to a lot, and I've mentioned it on the podcast. So if you're into that kind of thing, that is something you probably just want to go and just bookmark on your computer. But the article goes on to say that on December 3rd, 2020, the debrief reported on a leaked UFO photograph captured by the rear seat window system officer of an F-A-18 fighter jet. The object in the photo, now referred to, I hate when a web page jumps around on you, now referred to as the Acorn, and two other newly leaked images depicting unusual aerial objects were published by KLAS Las Vegas investigative journalist George Knapp on April 6, 2021, so this is a couple of weeks ago. The other two images described by Knapp as the metallic blimp and sphere were all reportedly captured within a period of 30 minutes on the same day. I'll not get into the rest of this too deeply, but I did post this up on the Gonzo Chronicles Facebook page, which is facebook.com/GonzoBarryDick. Yeah, that's right. It's a website named after a character from one of my books. So go there and you'll find that article linked. And another really interesting article that I stumbled upon that was shared by Erica Lukes that you know from Ancient Aliens on the History Channel. And she's been on a couple of times. I'm sure she'll be back on again sometime. The debrief reported on several intelligence reports of the UAP encounters widely distributed to the U.S. intelligence community. The photo of the Acorn object was said to have been captured in late 2018 off the East Coast. Subsequently, sources familiar with the incident have confirmed to the debrief that the date reported by Knapp of March 2019 is accurate. So this article goes on to, you know, get a little bit more in depth on that. Initially, there's actually a video in there and photos in that article you can click on. Initially, I thought those were recorded on the West Coast, but I guess I was wrong. The article that Erica Lukes shared was from thedrive.com, an article by Tyler Rogaway. And this really caught my attention because the headline of the article says, "Adversary drones are spying on the U.S. and the Pentagon acts like they're UFOs. The U.S. military seems aloof to the fact that it's being toyed with by a terrestrial adversary and key capabilities may be compromised as a result." It's a really interesting article. The whole point is this is a kind of a tough pill to swallow for those in the UFO community, and especially in the military, to consider that your foes, your enemies in this world, have such better drone technology possibly than we do, and they're spying on us domestically here, actually flying over military bases here inside the United States as threat assessment to, I guess, determine our capabilities and our war readiness. And I have ranted and ranted and ranted in previous podcasts, especially when it comes to space exploration and technology and advancement. Suspect number one is the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party. It would surprise me to no end if they had the moxie and balls to actually be flying in domestically inside of our borders, spying on individuals in this country that they think may be an intellectual threat or a propaganda threat that goes against their, you know, their communist propaganda. And you know, as we, you know, people in this country, they, you know, I've mentioned the Uyghurs before that are being held in prisons just for their religion inside China, over a million of them, just because they're Muslim. So we're not talking about a good regime, you know, an honest regime, which, you know, how many governments can we call honest? But they absolutely have bad intentions. And the fact that they don't really value human life, they don't see human rights the way that we do here in the West, it's a scary thing. Now, do I think that after reading the article, he writes a convincing piece, so definitely go read Tyler Rogaway on this. This also is on my Facebook page, this article, so you'll want to go look at that. But I think our military knows this. That's the problem. I think our military knows this, and yet it's still happening. So we have to ask why. I don't think they're so aloof, as he mentioned in the article, that we wouldn't know. Sometimes I think we know things and just let it happen. We knew these people were learning how to fly, you know, massive airplanes before 9/11 that were in the country illegally and taking flying lessons. But yet, you know, we let them stay. And then 9/11 eventually happened. So you have to ask yourself sort of why. If we know these things, do we continue to let these things happen? It's a good question. I'd love your thoughts on that. And, you know, of course, this article will kind of get into a little bit of that too. So it kind of merges, you know, what is real in the UFO world and what really isn't. And it kind of confirms that a lot of this is you know, government. Military, you know, things that can be explained away, but the technology is a little bit more advanced than culturally we are. So that could be a possibility. Would not surprise me one bit at all. So, yeah, before I go off on another rant on the CCP and their evil worldview, let's get into another urban legend, shall we? This one's a really good one. My question to you is, have you ever heard of the Bunny Man? Okay, this takes place in Oregon. There's a tunnel under a road that runs through remote woods in Oregon. An insane asylum had been built near there not long after the Civil War. And as the area was colonized and became more popular, houses started popping out, popping up in and around the, you know, around the asylum. And near the turn of the century, the residents started to question what was going on at the insane asylum. And, you know, when an escaped patient eventually got out and attacked the child, local authorities worked with the institution and finally decided to close the institution down. They loaded the patients onto buses and transferred them to other hospitals, other alternative locations. But one of the vehicles crashed in the woods after a violent passenger broke free from his chains and attacked the driver. All were later arrested, except for two, a guy by the name of Billy Smith and a man by the name of Michael Wood. Police and police dogs, they went through the forest. They picked up the trail that, oddly enough, was the trail was just littered with mutilated bodies of rabbits. Some of them, they were half-eaten. The trail led down the old wagon track to the bridge, where they found one of the missing patients. Michael Wood was hanging inside the tunnel. He had been bludgeoned to death, and his ears had been removed. Wow, kind of reminds you of Vincent Van Gogh, but only this guy didn't do it to himself. Attached to his foot was a note that read, "You'll never catch the bunny man." So his crazy friend, called himself the bunny man, cut his ears off, hung him in the bridge, in the tunnel, left a note behind. So they obviously attributed the murder to Billy Smith, who was supposed to have been a friend of Woods, and he was convicted of, you know, quite a few violent crimes against animals. And then he eventually ended up in the insane asylum. The search continued for Billy, or Bunny Man, as the cops started calling him and the people around the area started calling him. But he was never found. The only traces left behind were the rabbits nailed to trees that hunters would occasionally find on overgrown paths in the woods. They put that down as just a sick joke. They didn't really think anything about the Bunny Man because time had passed. Although Billy Smith was eventually forgotten, the story of the Bunny Man was passed down through the generations of locals there in Oregon. And the tunnel became a place where, I guess, bored teenagers went to dare themselves to stay till midnight until they saw the Bunny Man. You know how it goes. In 1965, a group of teens had gathered around the bridge on Halloween. Seven of them actually remained there until midnight. But one of the girls decided to walk home just before then. And she wandered away back down the track to the main road. And a moment later, she looked back and saw a bright flash of light coming from under the bridge. Even though there were no cars or people on the road, which was odd. And then she heard her friends screaming at the top of their lungs. And then silence. Darkness. So this girl runs home. The next day, all the teens who had remained under the bridge at midnight were found hanged with their ears cut off. The police found a dismembered rabbit nailed to a tree nearby with a note that said, "Don't forget the Bunny Man." They never managed to identify a suspect, never mind the murderer. Years later, a teenager and his girlfriend had driven down there in search of some privacy. You know what they're going to do. If you pull off the main road and down an old track, nobody could see your car under the bridge. So they thought they'd be alone down there for a little hanky-panky, right? They both knew the legends. They'd heard them since they were kids, but nobody was scared of them anymore. It was a bright summer night, and it was a full moon, and the place was full of rabbits, ironically. And a lot of them stopped in the car's headlights and stared as the pair drove up under the bridge. They soon lost track of time, and at midnight, they didn't notice the rabbits streaming under the bridge as if running from a predator or something. They only looked up when they saw a flash of light. The next person who saw them was a man searching for his dog that had run off to chase some rabbits. The teens were swinging from the roof of the bridge, their ears missing. As the pet owner stared in shock and just horrified fright at this grisly scene in front of him, The dog brought him a piece of paper in his mouth. On it, it said, "You'll never catch the bunny man." Saved by the bell on a phone call there. How crazy is that? So what about you? Do you guys have a favorite urban legend? Anything that's local to your town? Because I know we're kind of growing the listener audience a little bit, I noticed. So we have folks from actually from both coasts here in the U.S. listening. So that's awesome. And then people in between. So, yeah, what is your favorite urban legend or an urban legend that's many people may not know about? Let me know. I'd love to tell it on the show. Or maybe have you Zoom with me and tell it your damn self. How about that? You know, I wanted to bring up one more thing before I shut today's podcast off. I wanted to talk about a secret society. And there are so many conspiracy theory books out there and secret societies over the course of time. But I wanted to bring up one that was responsible for millions and millions of deaths in the 20th century. And I'm sure you've heard of what happened. What they did changed the face of the entire 20th century. And it's crazy how it happened. But there's a secret society, very secret organization, that was called the Black Hand. And some of you may have heard of the Black Hand, some of you may not. And I'm not talking about the mafia either. You know, I know that that's one thing, a phrase that's used to describe the mafia as Cosa Nostra, was the Black Hand. But no, this is different. The Black Hand was actually the name of a Serbian terrorist group with nationalistic aims. And I wanted to kind of give you a little bit of a backdrop to this. Where to start? Well, let me start with like 1908, and then I'm going to go back in time just a little bit, and then we'll jump back forward. On October 8th of 1908, this was just 2 days after Austria had annexed Bosnia and Herzegovina. A bunch of men got together. Some of them were high-ranking Serbian ministers. Some were political officials, generals. They held a meeting in Belgrade at City Hall. And they founded this semi-secret society. And that was called the Narodna something. But it means national defense. Which gave Pan-Slavism a focus, something to focus on in an organization. And the purpose of the group was to actually recruit and train partisans for a possible war between Serbia and Austria. And what they did, they undertook a lot of anti-Austrian propaganda. And they organized spies and saboteurs to operate inside Austria, inside the empire's provinces. And satellite groups were formed in Slovenia, Bosnia, Herzegovina, Istria. The Bosnian group went under the name of Young Bosnia. It was Mlada Bosna, which translates to Young Bosnia. So Young Bosnia's work, or actually National Defense, their work had been so effective that in 1909, Austria was so furious and pissed off that they put all kinds of pressure on the Serbian government to stop that anti-Austrian insurrections and the propaganda. Russia wasn't ready to really stand behind Serbia and back them should things come to a showdown, which they didn't think it would. So Belgrade grudgingly was forced to comply. And from then on, the National Defense organization concentrated on education and propaganda only within Serbia, trying to like brand itself as like some cultural organization. Okay, but let's back up and see how we got to that point. Serbian nationalism and a collapsing Ottoman Empire produced an independent Serbia in 1878. right? And a lot of this leads up to World War One, so this is a little bit of history. But, you know, they became independent in 1878, but many weren't satisfied as another ailing empire. Austria-Hungary held territory, and the people they felt should be in the greater Serbia were not there. So the two nations, one newer and the other one ancient but creaking, they didn't exist well together, and the Serbs are outraged in 1908 when Austria-Hungary finally annexed Bosnia-Herzegovina. So that coming together is actually what brought about that group, you know, the national defense. That's why they started in 1908 to promote, you know, patriotic agenda. And they were loosely secret. But it was out of that group that would form the core of what was called the Black Hand, which was formed on May 9th, 1911, under an alternative name called Unification or Death. Well, that gave you a good idea what their intentions were. So they actually advocated using violence to achieve what they call a Greater Serbia. You know, all Serbs under a Serb rule, and one Serbian state dominated that would dominate the region. And they began attacking targets from the Ottoman Empire and the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and you know, their followers outside it. So the key members of the Black Hand were mainly Serbian military and led by a guy by the name of Dimitrijevic, or they called him APIS, A-P-I-S. The violence was to be achieved through guerrilla acts by cells of just handfuls of people, kind of what we would think of today as, like, you know, terrorist cells operating in, you know, around the world. We don't know how many members the Black Hand had. Their secrecy, actually, at that point, was really effective. Although some people speculate that the membership might have been in the low thousands. But they were able to use their connections, this terrorist group was able to use their connections to the National Defense Society to gather a huge amount of political support in Serbia. So their colonel, APIS, was a senior military figure there. However, by 1914, this was tailing off after one assassination too many. They'd already tried to kill the Austrian emperor in 1911, and now the Black Hand began to work with a group to assassinate the heir to that imperial throne. Now, their acts actually caused millions of people to die. And by that, I mean, they didn't kill millions themselves. What they did is when they went to assassinate the heir to that imperial throne, his name was Franz Ferdinand. Their guidance was key, arranging training and probably providing weapons. And when the Serb government tried to get APIS to cancel, he made little effort, and which led to an armed group making the attempt in 1914. It took luck, fate, or whatever divine assistance they wanted to call on, but Franz Ferdinand was assassinated. Now, any of you history buffs will know that that assassination started World War One. World War One followed not long after he was assassinated, and that was what caused it. Austria, which was aided by German forces, occupied Serbia, and tens of thousands of Serbs were killed. Within Serbia itself, the Black Hand had become hugely powerful because of their military connections. But it was also more than an embarrassment to political leaders who wanted their own names kept well apart from this. And in 1916, the prime minister ordered it neutralized. So the people in charge were arrested, tried, four were executed, including the Colonel APIS, and hundreds went to prison. However, that began World War One, and you know, it's striking how many people died in World War One, and I'm gonna actually look that up, because the events of World War One and the way that ended obviously led to World War Two. which led to the Cold War, which led to interventions in Southeast Asia and Vietnam, Korea. The total number of military and civilian casualties in World War I was around 40 million. There were 20 million deaths, 21 million wounded. The total number of deaths include 9.7 million military personnel and about 10 million civilians. Let's take a look at World War II. World War I lasted more than 40 years, but about 16 million POC, so that's even more. But it's nowhere near 80 million, and World War II only happened 20 years later. Wow. That is incredible. I mean, that is absolutely incredible that many people died. World War II casualties, estimates suggest that some 75 million people died in World War II, including about 20 million military personnel and 40 million civilians. You stack these million, I mean, we're over 100 million dead because of one act, well, one of many, but an act committed by the secret society, the Black Hand. So how crazy events like ripple effects can happen. Anyway, I thought that was absolutely fascinating. I mean, when you go back and look at World War I and you had just the trench warfare and the madness that had to ensue, because it was after World War I that they were using mustard gas. So they started limiting the types of the gas warfare and the biological warfare that could be used in future wars. It's just amazing that that one secret society is responsible for the deaths of over 100 million people, and you know, in succession of like what they caused and the after effects of that. It's just amazing to me. Anyway, hope you guys have learned something. Hope you've enjoyed the show. Hey, if you do like the show, don't forget to hit subscribe and leave a ranking and a comment for me. I'd certainly appreciate that. And I've got a couple of guests lined up. I just need to get some dates. We're going to be talking to a guy you've seen him on TV quite a bit, Travel Channel, History Channel. He is an expert in kind of all the craziest things we've ever seen on these shows, on these mysterious shows. And I look forward to having him on. I'll announce that date on the next podcast, so you'll know when to expect that. But don't forget to also check me out on Facebook, Twitter, and CyrusAlderwood.com. And if you please, I would certainly appreciate you going and checking out. Let's see. Check out Revelation Calling. That was my last book published. It was next to last book published. And The Mystery of the Georgia Guidestones is all behind that. It's a fiction work. It's kind of like a red pill, kind of introducing you to the conspiracy theory behind the Georgia Guidestones and the drive for a new world order and world population control. Really interesting stuff. Great fiction story, though. I got a really good story behind it. So Revelation Calling, it's on Amazon. I'd certainly appreciate it if you check that out. And don't forget to leave a ranking comment on that, too. Thanks again for everybody for tuning in. I certainly appreciate you, and I will see you on down the road.